أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Last week we discussed about the concept of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam in Islam as a concept which all Muslims believe in and accept, and we discussed a few scholars who throughout the centuries had voiced their views about the tawatur of the traditions of Mahdi alayhi salam, and then we finished by bringing in a scholar who had doubted for the first time the idea of Mahdi, and that was Ibn Khaldun, who of course had not, he was not a scholar of hadith, he was not someone who could evaluate the sources and traditions about Imam Mahdi. He was a historian. However, due to a theory that he had put forward for the rise and fall of civilizations, he said that it is not possible that Imam Mahdi, who is from Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet, who is from the descendants of Fatima, to come at the end of the time when the solidarity, tribal solidarity, is lost. This was his criticism. So it was actually his theory who pushed him towards the doubt about the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and also his sympathy with the Fatimids, who believe that already Mahdi had appeared and a new line of Imam had started. Now, we want to look at another personality which is somehow contemporary, living in the late 19th and early 20th century, who is probably the most prominent person who has doubted the idea of Mahdi. Again, we have to see why. He was not a historian, he was a political activist, and due to certain circumstances he came to the conclusion that the idea of Mahdi is a detriment to Muslim community. We are not talking about Shias at the moment, we are talking about Muslim community as a whole. Now, this person is Muhammad Rashid Reza, the famous student of Muhammad Abduh. And he was a Syrian-born scholar who was born in 1865 and died in Egypt in 1935. And is considered as one of the most influential scholars and jurists of his generation, and the most prominent disciple of Muhammad Abduh. He had relations with Abduh and through him to Jamaluddin Afghani, and both of them were very political, very activist, and he is actually regarded to be the inspiration for Ikhwanul Muslimin. His theories and ideas shaped the political inclination and climate of Ikhwanul Muslimin in Egypt, and up till now that is the climate, although the climate has changed a little bit. Like Afghani and Abduh, like his teacher, Afghani and Abduh, Reza focused on the relative weakness of Muslims. This was his main concern. And if you look at the era, late 19th century, early 20th century, that was when the Muslims were at the most miserable situation. Under colonialism, they had lost their culture, their power, their dignity and everything. So we would expect activists coming who were somehow concerned about Muslim situation. He was looking after the causes. He wanted to locate the causes of weakness of Muslims in the couple of centuries which went before him and afterwards, the downfall of Ottomans and all these things which happened during his lifetime, I mean, the Islamic Caliphate was destroyed, the Ottoman Empire was destroyed, and so he focused on the relative weakness of Muslim societies vis-à-vis Western colonialism, blaming Sufi excesses. That's the whole plague and the problem that we have in the Islamic world, and why we have ended up in this situation, why the Europeans have come up and have taken our culture, our power, our dignity, is because we have went down the abyss of Sufism, one thing. The blind imitation of the past, taqlid of the traditional ulama, the stagnation of the ulama, and the resulting failure to achieve progress in science and technology, these were the causes he identified as the main causes of Muslims turning back in their power and dignity. He held that these flaws could be recovered by a return to what he saw as the true principles of Islam. And unfortunately, the idea was very nice, the passionate sort of zealous feelings about Muslim dignity, it was very respectable. But what he put forward as a solution is what we see nowadays as Salafiyah. And sometimes you feel you want to do something, but when you achieve that idea, when you realize the idea that you are following, you see it ends up in something which is not very useful. And I don't think Salafiyah has really given any prominence to Muslim Ummah nowadays. And Salafiyah was that we have to go to the origins, to the practice of Salafus Saleh. We have to leave all these things which have traditionally been accumulated as Muslim culture during centuries. Something like Ibn Taymiyyah, but of course a modern time Ibn Taymiyyah. And politically, Reza promoted the restoration of the caliphate, which had just crumbled before his eyes, after it had weakened and weakened decade by decade. It is said that Hassan al-Banna and Ikhwan al-Muslimun are influenced more than anyone else by him, which is of course something quite reasonable, accept. Now, one of the causes he identifies and he elaborates on in his book, Tafsir al-Minar. Al-Minar, of course, initially Al-Minar was a journal published by Afghani and Abdo, and then it was continued by Muhammad Rashid Reza. Also, Muhammad Abdo started to write a tafsir of the Quran, which he just passed away in the middle of Surah Baqarah. And Reza, Rashid Reza, continued writing that tafsir al-Minar up to Juz 11, and he passed away as well. So the tafsir is not a complete tafsir. However, he came to places where he could direct his very, very sharp criticism to the idea of Mahdi, saying that this is the main cause that we are here at the moment. Believing in Mahdi has caused Muslims to fall in such a situation that we see today. In the ninth volume of his tafsir, Tafsir al-Minar, under the verse 7187, Surah Al-A'raf, verse 187, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ السَّاعَةِ أَيَّانَ مُرْسَاهَا قُلْ إِنَّمَا عِلْمُهَا عِنْدَ رَبِّي لَا يُجَلِّيهَا لِوَقْتِهَا إِلَّا هُوَ. The translation of the verse, they question you concerning the hour, and السَّاعَة, when this is going to happen, when will it set in? Say, its knowledge is only with my Lord, none except him shall manifest it at its time. It will weigh heavy on the heavens and the earth, it will not overtake you but suddenly and surprisingly. This is, of course, the verse in Surah Araf. Now, in his tafsir, he starts to talk about the importance of the hour, Ashratu Sa'ah. When the Quran says Sa'ah, no one would know when it happens, but the Prophet had said that There are some times for it. Before the sa'a comes in, before the hour sets in, you see things which might be very amazing and bewildering. That's the continuation of the translation. He provides a long discussion. You see that from page 462 to 507, that's about 45 pages. He goes in length, and sometimes we get bored. For us, of course, these things are very, very old, repetitive type of things coming up against the Zionist regime. Of course, he doesn't use the term Zionism, Israel, and how Jews have come and taken Muslim land. He goes into detail. It's more like a political manifest, so rather than a tafsir, in many cases when you read Tafsir al-Manar. He provides a long discussion regarding the life length of the world and brings different ideas. You know, the Bible puts the life of the whole world, the length of the period for which the whole universe would live and continue existing to 7,000 years, something like that. And he brings views of different Muslims, and then he says there are different modern views as well about it, and different views about the portent of the hour. This is where he, of course, comes to the idea. He then turns to one of these portents, which is the advent of Dajjal. He argues that the traditions in this respect, although mutawatir in meaning, so he accepts that we cannot reject the idea of Dajjal. Dajjal certainly come at the end of the time. That's one of the portents and signs of the hour. However, they are contradictory in the content and certain and contain many Israeliyat, the traditions which have somehow penetrated to the Muslim literature through Jew converts who brought the stories of Bible into the bulk of our tradition, especially through Ka'b al-Ahbar. Hence, the details should be discarded. So this is what he believes. It's quite a nice idea. Every detail we have about Dajjal are just accounts which we cannot rely upon. But when we put all these together, we cannot doubt about the very idea, because it became mutawatir al-ma'nawi, as we discussed last week. It's not mutawatir al-lafzi, but mutawatir al-ma'nawi. So we cannot discard the idea of Dajjal. This is what it is. And it's a good, very good view. And what could be known for certain about Dajjal is that the Prophet had a vision about his advent. How could Prophet inform us? He had a vision that he will come, and about all those things that he will do. He will appear at the end of the time, shows miracles and extraordinary powers of himself. A great number of people will be deceived by him. He is a Jew. The Muslims will fight him in the holy cities of Palestine. He says these are certain things that you know about that Dajjal. Other details we have to discuss. And then he turns to the traditions about Mahdi under the title At-Ta'aruz wal-Ishkalat fi Ahadith al-Mahdi, contradictions and problems in traditions regarding Mahdi alayhi salam. Now, he had provided a long discussion about contradictions on traditions of Dajjal, and then he says the very idea is acceptable, the details we discard. When it comes here, he says, now here we have more problems, because the contradictions in the tradition of Mahdi is even stronger and more evident. Now, we are talking about Sunni sources of traditions of Mahdi. And to conciliate between them is more difficult. And the confusion there is more noticeable. For this reason, the two sheikhs, Bukhari and Muslim, have not paid any attention to those traditions in their Sahih books. This was always an argument used by Ibn Taymiyyah and people who followed suit, that if anything was not discussed in Bukhari and Muslim, we discard it. Although it comes to Sahih tradition. And this is a very, very, of course, flawed argument which we have to discuss somewhere else. Because no Sunni scholar accepted this at all. And that's why they collected other traditions which were not in Bukhari and Muslim. And even Bukhari himself says, I have many, many Sahih traditions. I have a selection of them in my Sahih book. So Bukhari said this is a selection of Sahih traditions. However, they disregard that and say, if they have not come in Bukhari and Muslim, that means they did not regard these very seriously. And after this claim, he argues that most of the troubles, dissensions, wars, and evil innovations among Muslim nations have taken place in the name of Mahdi during the history. So what an evil idea this concept of Mahdi has been. That you see in Iraq, in Hijaz, in Syria, in Africa, people have risen, have fought in the name of Mahdi, claiming that they were Mahdi, and look what a dissension they have created in the Muslim world. This exact idea was something which was put forward a couple of years ago by Abdul Karim Suresh in his arguments against the concept of Mahdi in Iran. It's something which is recurrent, actually, coming up and up again. And we will, of course, discuss the view of other scholars about this. So, he said, what an idea this has been in the history. And also, he criticizes Muslim masses and their scholars in the way they believe in Mahdi. He says that such a belief should have motivated them, this belief in the idea of Mahdi, if it is true. He said, suppose this belief has been true. This should have motivated them to create a strong community prepared to be led by Mahdi and help him to establish justice. However, it has led them instead to total resignation and desertion of responsibility, waiting for the imminent advent of Mahdi. Phenomenologically, this is a very, very important statement. Why? Because we realize that at that time, at the beginning of the 20th century, Muslims were so disappointed because of colonialization and the rise of Western civilization, the humiliation that Muslims had experienced at the hands of French and British and other European nations. They had resignated completely and left everything for Mahdi to come and solve. And this is what he is criticizing, actually. Why have you become like this? If it is true that there is a Mahdi, you should prepare yourself for his advent, not to resign completely and leave everything to the hands of destiny. Now, they have lost their might and glory, doing nothing but waiting for Mahdi to come and restore it to them. They think he will do that with his miraculous power, not with army and navy and tanks, warships and jets and bombs and rockets, as if he is even more special than the Prophet, because Prophet won his wars with weapons and army and these things, and these Muslims think that they are waiting for a miracle to come, they do not prepare themselves, and they think when Mahdi comes, he takes a sword and just kills everyone with it. No tanks, no weapons, no jets. He is actually looking at the West. This is how they have come and taken us. So we have to think in the same way. And then, of course, the discussion is very long. I have just selected a few statements. They do not listen to famous Ibn Khaldun. Now, he brings up Ibn Khaldun here, who warned them that governments and civilization are subject to laws, sunan, of God, as is evident in the Book of God and the Book of Creation, you see in Quran and in the universe that everything is run by laws. And one of those laws is that no government can persist without solidarity. Asabiyya is just reproducing Ibn Khaldun's theory. And that solidarity is now taken away from Quraysh and the household of the Prophet by non-Arabs, Ajam. Now here, we see a very pan-Arabist feeling in Rashid Rida, talking about other Muslim nations with disrespect and humiliation. That these are the causes of problem. We Arabs have come together and do something again. And had they listened to him, to Ibn Khaldun, they would have moved in the direction of these laws, and that would have given them some of what they expect from Mahdi, if not all of it. They do not need to wait for Mahdi. They can just accomplish whatever they are waiting for, expecting from Mahdi. They can accomplish it by themselves. He says, in the past, the Jews were deceived. This is very interesting. I really laughed when I was reading this. In the past, the Jews were deceived, as we are today, by wrong interpretations of what was found in their books about the Savior Messiah, who would have restored to them the kingdom of David and Solomon. They were believing these rubbish things that the ulama were telling them. And you see, this Salafiyya is very strongly against the scholars and ulama of the time. And they were doing blind taqlid of their scholars in that. And for that reason, they were weak and divided over centuries, the Jews. However, the later generations became aware of the laws governing civilizations, as if they had read Ibn Khaldun, and started to work towards it by creating the Jewish homeland. They applied these laws through science and technology. It shows how science and technology was showing its formidable appearance, even to people like Rashid Rida at that time. We have to judge them in their own context, of course. They applied those laws through science and technology, which they learn in Hebrew language, the language that they have spent sizable sums of money to revive. And he says, we have to learn from them to revive Arabic language and not speak to the language of Ajam anymore. And as a contrast, Muslims have resigned and have left everything to the advent of Mahdi, thinking that he will change the laws of God, while they read in the Quran that فَهَلْ يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَّا سُنَّةَ الْأَوَّلِينَ فَلَنْ تَجِدَ لِسُنَّةِ اللَّهِ تَبْدِيلًا وَلَنْ تَجِدَ لِسُنَّةِ اللَّهِ تَحْوِيلًا. This is clearly mentioned in the Quran. Do they await anything except the precedent of the ancients, the laws governing the societies and the nature? Yet you will never find any change in Allah's precedent, and you will never find any revision in Allah's precedent. So if you want glory, this is the only way, not waiting for Mahdi. Now, there are many flaws in this argument. We'll come to that later on, of course. He says they have not only done that, but have over the centuries created false Asabiyya around Mahdi, which is Asabiyyatul Jahiliyyah. They say that everyone would come round him, and instead of this Asabiyyatul Arab, they have created this Asabiyyatul Jahiliyyah. The very concept of Mahdi, Al-Muntazar, he says, is a product of Al-Asabiyyatul Farsiyyatul Majusiyyah. Now you see the tone when it comes to non-Arabs. Very vehemently arose his feeling, very excited feeling about these non-Arabs coming to Islam and these things. Is a product of Al-Asabiyyatul Farsiyyatul Majusiyyah, the Persians or Syrian Asabiyyah. These have created this idea of Mahdi al-Muntaza. The very people who try to devastate the Arab Ummah and their kingdom, is not talking now about Muslim Ummah, he's talking about Arab Ummah. It's very strange of Rashid Rida talking this way, as if Islam and Arab are identical. and attempted to destroy their religion, which had given them that power and kingdom in the past. Well, he forgot that that power and kingdom was built on civilization of Egypt and Iran, and all the hard work of that civilization was done by these expertise, which were product of these civilizations. Anyhow, we don't want to go into discussion. We're just talking about Mahdi at the moment. We have a lot to discuss with Rashid Reza in this vein. Then he tries to show the contradiction of tradition about Mahdi. Contradictions in traditions. However, what he provides is a bunch of traditions and historical accounts which demonstrate a disagreement in the person of the Mahdi and not in the concept of the Mahdi. That's a completely different issue. That who Mahdi is a completely different issue. He fails to reject or to show the difficulty in traditions about the concept of Mahdi, so he goes to traditions about the person of Mahdi. That there are lots of contradictions here. Rashid Reza come back to the issue again in the next volume, while explaining the verse 32 of Surah At-Tawbah. يُرِيدُونَ أَن يُطْفِئُوا نُورَ اللَّهِ بِأَفْوَاهِهِمْ وَيَعْبَى اللَّهُ إِلَّا أَن يُسَمَّ نُورَهُ وَلَوْ كَرَهَ الْكَافِرُونَ. They desire to put out the light of God with their mouth, but God is intent perfecting His light. Now, this is one of the verses which has been put forward as a prediction about the advent of Mahdi alayhi. Because يُسَمَّ نُورَهُ, He will complete His light. This would not happen unless someone could completely illuminate this light in the whole world and in the heart of everyone. So the exegetes, not Shia exegetes, we are now talking about the Sunni world, have actually mentioned that this verse is only realized at the time of Mahdi. Now, after examining different possibilities of the fulfillment of this promise, he continued, and some scholars believe that, certainly Sunni scholars, this good tidings is only fulfilled at the end of the time by the advent of Mahdi, followed by the descent of Jesus. However, he opines, the spread of this idea among Muslims has been the main cause of their backwardness and for shirking their responsibility in implementing the Sharia and supporting the Da'wah and establishing its sovereignty. It's very interesting because the idea of Mahdi in Iran just before the revolution had the same contention. Had caused the same contention. Some people said that we have to do nothing, we just wait for Mahdi to come, because before Mahdi nothing could be set right. And some others said, no, we have to do Amr bil Ma'ruf, Nahi al-Munkar. We are not going to take Mahdi's place, but we have our own duties to do. And the same thing here, apparently the same sort of climate was existing in the Sunni world, as we have it in the Shia world as well. However, relying on future unseen things, he said, would not discharge them. He said that relying on future unseen things would not discharge them of their present obligation. Well, no one would deny that. He refers his readers to his above mentioned discussion and said, we mentioned in Tafsir of Surah Al-A'raf that the traditions about Mahdi are contradictory and none of them are sound. Now this is a new claim. All these traditions originate from a well-known Shi'i political drive. This is the most noble suggestion in the scholarly world of Ahlul Sunnah. That the traditions of Mahdi is a creation of Shia. This is something that no Sunni scholar would ever accept. However, he puts this forward, and because the Shias were not Arab, as he thought, thinking that Shia originated from Iran and non-Arab places, he very, of course, daringly put forward this idea. And the Jews, for thousands of years, were relying on such a concept to restore Palestine for themselves, on the concept of Messiah. And when they saw the futility of that, they utilized the British government to help them and achieve their goal. So, if British government can do the job of Mahdi or Messiah, why should we wait for Mahdi? We also should find some power to do the job of Messiah. The type of thinking about Mahdi that he comes to somehow give prominence to one nation, the Jewish type of messianic thought, that Messiah would come and give prominence to Jews and in at the expense of everyone else. He thought that, well, we are waiting for Mahdi to come to give prominence to Arabs at the expense of everyone else. If the Jews could do it with the help of British government, why not we do it with the help of some other powers? Well, of course, he doesn't say that explicitly, but this is what the tone of the argument would tell us. He woefully concludes that, are we not more deserved to preserve the remnant of our territory, considering their small number and our huge population, the Jews' small number and our huge population? So why have they been able to do it and we haven't done it? Now, of course, I don't think the idea or the criticism carries such a weight to be worthwhile to even criticize it from the social perspective. Yes, of course, when he says the traditions of Mahdi are a creation, fabrication of Shias, when he says the traditions of Mahdi are all contradictory and baseless, none of them are sound, then that needs a response. But other views, you know, that this is the past century. These people lived in their times and we live in our times. Now we can realize, understand the world in a different light, certainly. However, the response to Rashid Reza, the response about, not about what he has claimed, that if we go for some power we can replace him, it's for Mahdi, alayhi salam. The scholar response, I want to bring this response from the most prominent contemporary Sunni scholar of Hadith, who is an undisputed authority in this field. Someone who, when his name is mentioned, everyone says, yes, that is the highest authority in Sunni Hadith. And this is a man called Muhammad Nasiruddin Al-Albani, who passed away in 1999. He was, of course, a scholar from Albania, who then moved to Turkey and had his studies there, and moved to Medina, to Hejaz, to many different centers of learning, and there is no dispute about his authority. He was an important and influential Islamic scholar of the 20th century, specializing in the field of Hadith and Fiqh, and author of more than 300 books in the field. And Abdul Aziz bin Baz, you know him, of course, the late Mufti of Saudi Arabia, considered him the Mujaddid of this field. You know, there is a Sunni idea turning point of every century, there is a Mujaddid, someone who comes and revives the religion. And someone like Ibn Baz regarded Al-Albani to be the Mujaddid because of his hard work and very critical, accurate, scholarly writings on Sunni Hadith, of course. He said about him, I have not seen under the surface of the sky a man more knowledgeable in Hadith. This is what Ibn Baz says about Al-Albani. In our current time, than the great scholar Muhammad Nasiruddin Al-Albani. Now, in an article in the journal At-Tamattun Al-Islami, provided on his personal website, he has a personal website, you can go to his website as well, of course it's in Arabic. Al-Albani writes that Rashid Reza not only rejected traditions about Mahdi alayhi salam, but also denied three other concepts which are even more firmly established in our traditions. That is the advent of Dajjal, the descent of Jesus, and the intercession of the Prophet on the Day of Judgment. Any view which had some sort of vicinity to Shia faith, Rashid Reza rejected. And one of them was the Shafa'a, which is very strange because no Muslim scholar can deny the concept of Shafa'a of the Prophet on the Day of Judgment. It is one of the necessities of Islamic faith. However, he rejected them. No blame, because he was not a scholar. He was an activist. And activists usually bring up out views which are put up views which are not very scholarly, certainly, and not very accurate. Now, traditions on all these concepts, he says, are both sound and mutawatir. On Shafa'a, on descent of Isa alayhi salam, on Dajjal, and on Mahdi. On all these concepts, he says, traditions are sound and mutawatir. Sound is sahih. Tradition is accepted as sahih. Regarding Mahdi, he says, the sound traditions are abound. The sound traditions abound, sorry, R is the term, of which he provides four examples. Now, the four examples are very interesting because he wants to bring traditions in which no person is ever, in the imagination of any scholar of hadith, have been close by 100,000 miles to Shi'ism. He wants to bring people who are completely away from Shi'ism. This is what he brings in his chains about Mahdi. He says that the first hadith, Hadith of Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, لو لم يبق من الدنيا إلا يوم لطول الله ذلك اليوم حتى يبعث فيه رجلا مني أو من أهل بيتي يواتو اسمه اسمي واسم أبيه اسم أبي يملأ الأرض قسطا وعدلا كما ملأت ظلما وجورا. This is the main tradition which is almost mutawatir from the Prophet Ibn Mas'ud. If not even, if nothing is left from the life of this world but one day, Allah would extend the length of that day until He would send a man from me or from my Ahlul Bayt. This is, of course, the Rawi is hesitating. His name is my name. His father's name is my father's name. Of course, this is one of the discrepancies between Shia Hadith and Sunni Hadith, because Sunni Hadith says that his father's name is my father's name. He will fill the earth with justice and equity after it has been filled with oppression and injustice. This is the hadith. And this, يَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا كَمَا مُلَأَتْ ظُلْمًا وَجَوْرًا, is something which you find in many, many traditions. He says, this hadith is reported by Abu Dawud, Tirmidhi, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Tabarani, Abu Nu'aym, Khatib al-Baghdadi, from Zarr ibn Huwaysh to Ibn Mas'ud, and Tirmidhi, one of the authors of the Sahih, says, Hasanun Sahihun. This is a sound hadith. Then, and Zahabi also says this is Sahih hadith. The second hadith, the same hadith, he gives from a different chain. From Ali ibn Abi Talib, of course, you don't criticize that I just said no Shi'i is in the chain of these traditions, and you say, well, what about Ali ibn Abi Talib? They don't regard Ali ibn Abi Talib to be a Shi'i. So, Ali ibn Abi Talib, radiallahu anhu, marfu'an nahwahu. The same thing Ali reports from the Prophet, and there are two chains for this tradition, and the first chain is reported by Abu Dawood, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, sound chain. And the other one, Ibn Majah, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, a very good chain. Now, this is a scholar discussion. This is not a social discussion anymore. This is not activist sort of discussion. It's a very dry scholarly discussion about traditions of Mahdi. The third hadith from Abu Sa'id al-Khudri. Actually, he brings four of the companions of the Prophet. Of course, two companions, one wife of the Prophet, that these have reported these, and it has reached us through many different chains from these people. And there are, of course, two different chains to the tradition of Abu Sa'id al-Khudri. Tirmidhi, Ibn Majah, Hakim al-Nishaburi, Ahmad ibn Hanbal, and Tirmidhi says, very good hadith. Hakim says, sahih according to conditions of Muslim. And Zahabi agreed with him. And the second one is from Abu Dawood and Hakim, and he has said that it's sahih. The fourth companion who has reported this, Umm Salamah, wife of the Prophet. And he says that in a book about sahih and hadith, and za'if, I've written in hadith, I have given a long discussion of the chain of this one tradition from Umm Salamah. What we have here is what he accepts from another scholar, Siddiq Hasan Khan. He quotes his views here. He says that the traditions on Mahdi, despite their nuances, are abundant, meeting the criteria of tawatur. Now, this is not an ordinary man talking like this, of course, he is the highest authority. He criticizes Ibn Khaldun for disapproving all the traditions, hinting that he was not a muhaddith, but a researcher. He was just like a student in this field, not a real scholar of hadith. He continues, the traditions on Mahdi are a mixture of sound and weak hadith, and the concept was very well known and accepted by all Muslims in all time. And that is why people tried to rise in the name of Mahdi. Of course, when Rashid Rizwa says that this has been the cause of fitna, that people have used this concept and have created bloodshed, this is against him, because this shows that everyone was aware of this concept of Mahdi and they were trying to use it for their political aims. He gives a summary of well-known beliefs about Mahdi, which are as follows. Now, this is the Sunni, the core of Sunni belief about Mahdi. It's very important. He is from Ahlul Bayt. Appears at the end of the time, supporting faith and establishing justice. Muslims will follow him, and he conquers all Muslim territory. He is called Mahdi. Dajjal and other portents of the hour will appear with or after his appearance. Jesus descends after him and kills Dajjal. Jesus prays behind him. That's all. These are the non-controversial beliefs about Mahdi in the Sunni world. Al-Albani criticizes Rashid Reza and Ibn Khaldun for not investigating traditions one by one, and for not searching for multitudes of chains of transmissions recorded for each hadith. Just reject an idea on the basis of some theories. Had they done that, they would have found proof which would normally confirm those elements of creed which could not be confirmed by tawatur. Al-Albani states that the most evident proof that Rashid Rida had not investigated the tradition is his claim that in every chain of such tradition, at least one Shia reported could be found. This is what Rashid Rida says. And he says this is not the case. And of course then he goes to a sort of ecumenical discussion here. He says that in the four examples mentioned above, no Shia reporter is registered. Well, except I didn't know he called it for us. And although he adds, the existence of Shia reporters in the chain would not harm the soundness of sedition. This comes now from a justice scholar. Because both Shia and Sunni scholars believe that the existence of a Sunni scholar in the chain of transmission would not harm the hadith, if they are honest. And the Sunnis believe the existence of a Shia reporter would not harm the tradition, if they are honest. This is what he said. He adds, the existence of Shia reporters in the chain would not harm the soundness of tradition, so long as they are confirmed to be honest and having good memory. This is the only condition. This, he said, is a well-established fact in Ilm al-Hadith. And that is why the two Shaykhs, Bukhari and Muslims, have reported in their Sahih books traditions from Shias, as well as followers of other sects. If that was the case, if this is why you reject the hadith, because there is a Shia in the chain of transmission, you are rejecting the conditions and the standards of Bukhari and Muslims and everyone else. And also, now, I'll quickly go through these. I have not translated these, because the article is long. He says that some of the scholars have said that these traditions are all wrong because believing in that would mean, as Rashid Reza said, that they have to rely on the appearance of Mahdi, and they leave all sorts of effort and work and action in their lifetime, and they think that by wiping the concept of Mahdi, Muslims would do an act. And he says this is not the case. I mean, the ahadith of Mahdi does not in any way hint that Muslims should leave their duty at any time. That's something about the future. That's something theological about eschatology of this world. It's nothing to do with the present duty of Muslims at all. This is what he says Rashid Reza does not understand. And he says that Rashid Reza says that the idea of Mahdi has caused lots of problems, and many people have claimed to be Mahdi, and that's why we have to reject it. He says many people during this have claimed to be God. Should you reject the idea of God because many people have claimed to be God? Certainly not. Many people have claimed, for example, to have gone to, he says that Ahmad Qadiani, Dajjal al-Hind, has actually resorted to this idea. But this is not something that for the sake of it we reject the main idea. He also says that, look at the history of Muslims, how they have, by believing in qada and qadar, which is something mentioned in the Quran, they believed in jabr and predetermination. Why predetermination? This is a Sunni scholar saying it. Predetermination is rejected by our rational understanding. Predetermination in the sense of human action, that we are forced to do whatever we do. He said, but we cannot reject qada and qadar, the idea of qada and qadar. But we have to understand it rightly and correctly. And the idea of Mahdi, we have to understand it correctly, not giving false interpretation to it and saying that since this has caused false interpretation, then we reject it completely. وَخُلَاسَةُ الْقَوْلِ, this is what he says in conclusion. إِنَّ عَقِيدَةَ خُرُوجُ الْمَهْدِ, the belief in the advent of Mahdi. عَقِيدَةٌ ثَابِتَةٌ مُتَوَاتِرَةٌ عَنْهُ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ, is a belief which has been established by tawatur from the Prophet, peace be on him. Believing in it is wajib, يَجِبُ الْإِيمَانُ بَهَا لِأَنَّهَا مِنْ أُمُورِ الْغَيْبِ, because this belongs to the realm of ghayb. وَالْإِيمَانُ بَهَا مِنْ صِفَاتِ الْمُتَّقِينَ, believing in it is one of the attributes of muttaqeen, كَمَا قَالَ تَعَالَى أَلِفْ لَمْ مِيمْ ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهُ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَإِنَّ إِنْكَارَهَا لَا يَسْتُرُ إِلَّا مِنْ جَاهِلٍ أَوْ مُكَابِرٍ. To deny this would not come accept, denial of this would not come except from an ignorant person or a person who does not accept reason and arguments. Okay, this is the end of this. Of course, I wanted to include a couple of other Shi'i people. I don't say scholars because, of course, there are scholars, but the scholars not in this field, who had doubted the idea, but I think that would be enough because the response would be the same response. Whatever they have said is not more than whatever Rashid Reza has said. It's just a diluted form of what Rashid Reza has said, except when you come to the concept of the person of Mahdi. Then some Shias have put forward some arguments doubting that Mahdi is Hujjatul Hasan, Ibn al-Hasan al-Askari. Then we discuss it there. So we are done with doubts about Mahdi alayhi salam, and inshallah we continue after Easter Friday, after Good Friday. So next Friday we are off, and inshallah we continue on 17. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alayhi wa sallam.
So, thank you very much for contextualizing the basis on which basis of doubt on the Mahdi. A modern equivalent, probably last week, would be if the world economy relies on retail trade, and retail trade is hampered by people trading salat in English and salat in Persian or doing something like that. It's interesting that he comes and concludes that the belief in the Mahdi's father, the Ghayb. In that, does he affirm that the Mahdi is already born, or does he attribute this ghayb to something that's going to happen in the future, i.e. the birth of the Mahdi is yet to happen?
No. By ghayb, he means something which is going to happen in the future and we are unaware of.
Right.
No. Certainly, no Sunni believe that Mahdi is already born. So this is a very uniquely Shi'i view.
I failed to understand the main argument of Rashid al-Rida and what he's basing it on, what he's basing his doubts on.
He says that the idea of Mahdi has caused Muslims to rely on something which would come in the future and would solve their problems. And therefore they do not think to solve their own problems now. And they think that their salvation will be through a miraculous sort of event which will be done by Mahdi alayhi salam. And therefore they think that they have to leave all these laws, sunan, of that if one nation becomes powerful in terms of military, economy, they could overcome others. They have left all these things relying on the idea of Mahdi. This is his main argument.
That's the fault of the people, not
to do with
the concept of the Mahdi.
Of course, yeah.
Just to continue from this is the point, what I understood from Rashid Rida is that the relation to the concept of Mahdi, but not as a person, and by dealing with the concept of Mahdi, does it mean that it's a period where justice will be established? It can be established by anybody.
No, he said instead of believing in Mahdi, let's believe in ourselves. And let's do things that we are hoping that Mahdi will come and realize by our own power and effort. However, of course, this is wrong to think that Mahdi will come to give us power. This is what the Jews as well thought about Jesus Christ and failed to recognize him as Messiah. Because they thought, if this is Jesus, if this is Messiah for whom we were waiting, who has come and is preaching us to be kind to our neighbors rather than taking sword and fighting against the Romans and these things, this is not Messiah. I think there is something wrong with his perception of the idea of Mahdi as well. Mahdi should come, instead of taking this part that يَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا, he would fill the earth with justice. He thought that justice is with us, and we are the right people, and therefore Mahdi should come to save us. A completely Jewish idea of Messiah. And that is why he has gone, that is where I think he has gone astray.
Regarding your point that we need a power to get something back, as you said, the Jews got the help from the British government to get the land back or restore it.
That's not my point, that's his point.
Just to put in the context here, I see his timeline was 1865 to 1935.
Yeah.
The creation of the state of Judaism of Israel was post 1935. Mm-hmm. Now you pass by.
It started from 1911. And they came to buy land and British helped them very much. This is what he is talking about at the moment. That's why he doesn't talk about Zionism.
So to put in perspective, if he passed in 1930, the creation of Israel was post-Palestine.
Yeah.
The British government helped them to achieve their goal.
Yeah, they achieved their goal to create a homeland for themselves. This is when actually they were coming and settling down with the force of British government. They are not identical, no, but they share many, many views with each other. But Salafiyya was more a political movement, while Wahhabism was a sort of religious tribal movement. Therefore, they are different. Salafiyya, Rashid Reza, of course, was one of the most prominent promoters of this. Who thought that we have to go to the original practice of Salafus Saleh to be saved from all these troubles. However, Wahhabis, although they had the same type of thinking following Ibn Taymiyyah, who was a sort of revival in that sense, but they have their own unique ideas as well. So, very close to each other, we think. Very close.
Okay. Is it correct to understand that he is looking at the Mahdi and the perspective of somebody who is going to achieve your worldly gains for you, as opposed to from a religious angle, because you're talking about the Jews taking over the land, so physical that it's all worldly. Is that how he was looking at at the concept of Mahdi,
yeah,
as somebody who's trying to come and destroy your worldly land?
I think he identified that Arab Ummah with rights and justice. And therefore, when we say Mahdi comes and يَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا, that means he gives everything to us. Which is wrong. We don't know. Maybe when Mahdi comes, he kills all of us. He establishes justice. He doesn't come to give promotion to one nation over another nation. He is the last, he is بَقِيَّةُ اللَّهِ, the last a person who is authorized by God to put things right. And he does it, of course, in his own way, not we thinking that he comes to just address our needs and our concerns. He has his own spiritual concerns, certainly. The problem is that he identified that injustice with whatever went against them at the time. And justice would come with the promotion of that Arab nation.
I just wanted to ask, what you said when you originally started, you said he thought it was due to Sufi excesses.
Sufism, of course, has been a long established tradition in the Muslim world. A mild Sufism has always been looked upon as something desirable. However, then Sufism, in the sense that people should resign and retreat to their own zawiyas and do very unconventional, engage in very unconventional practices in terms of Islamic type of worship, that was excesses of Sufism that he was talking about. Yeah.
Hello.
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 You say that Muhammad Rashid is promoted the reformation of the Delta. On the other hand, he believed in Ibn Khaldun's concept of Ahliya and Popularity.
Yeah.
So the Caliphate had been sort of fallen by that time, therefore the popularity was gone. How did he believe in the reformation of that Popularity?
Yeah, he was of the view, you are right. I mean, his views that would not conform with Ibn Khaldun's views. But he was believing in a sort of Arab Asabiyyah. He had somehow replaced that tribal Asabiyyah of Ibn Khaldun with a sort of national Asabiyyah of Arabs, which of course would have no meaning in Ibn Khaldun's atmosphere of thinking. Asabiyyah is tribal Asabiyyah for Ibn Khaldun, no other Asabiyyah. So he somehow made it a modern type of concept of Asabiyyah, that Arab nations should come together. And many, reading Rashid Rida, you really realize why the Arab League and Arab countries are so much against other Muslim countries. They are somehow influenced by this idea of pan-Arabism, Arab nationalism and such things, which is of course not accepted in Islam, certainly. Islam brings everyone together, but this was a trend at the beginning of Islam as well. You had Arabs and Mawali, something which of course later on Amirul Mu'mineen and after Amirul Mu'mineen tried to remove it, but of course it was not possible. So strong the pressures coming from different sides. But Banu Abbas destroyed this system of Arabs and Mawali. And now you see in every book of tradition, you have to determine whether this person was an Arab or a Mawla, or an Ajab, or a non-Arab. Because that was the trend until the middle of the Abbasids when they completed. Because Abbasids came to power by the help of Mawali. They couldn't promote Arabs at the expense of the Mawali who were their army. So this is the trend which we see again in the beginning of the 20th century.
Just on a second note, he mentions about the stagnation caused by imitation. But he talks about the stagnation of the ulama. In your opinion, do you feel
this is a different taqlid he's talking about. This is not a Shi'i concept of taqlid, of course. He's talking about a different type of taqlid. That's taqlid in views and ideas, not Shi'i type of taqlid. That, for example, we follow our ulama because they say Mahdi exists, we follow them, we say Mahdi exists. Because they say at the end of the time things will be right, we follow them, we say yes, at the end of the time things will be right. This type of taqlid, not taqlid is fiqh, which is something completely, it's the area of expertise. And we know that in Shi'i creed you cannot do taqlid in concepts and ideas and tenets of belief. It should be only in the expertise of practice.
Did he have other followers? Because he's a prominent.
Not in his idea of Mahdi, certainly. But yes, of course, nowadays you find many Salafis who reject the idea of Mahdi based on this type of arguments. Actually, this article written by Nasruddin al-Albani is a response to one of the readers of this At-Tamadun al-Islami who writes that until now we were following Rashid Reza, rejecting the idea of Mahdi, but we read your book, Al-Sahih wa Da'if, that you had wrote this ahadith, we are somehow doubtful whether he was right or not right. And then he explains in that article. Yes, and Ikhwan al-Muslimun are, as a whole, influenced very much by Rashid Reza's thinking. But certainly not all beliefs or ideas of Rashid Rida is followed by all his followers. So there is a mixture of
people. Thank you very much for your lecture. The concept of Ismailiyya entering Islam is also a recurrent theme.
Yeah.
We hear from right from the time when Muqtada was fighting for even the warfare, the courting, new changes, and because of the Mawali were fighting as well, and there was a change from being entirely 100% Arab to proportions are changing, increasing numbers of other people becoming Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
So, has there ever been sort of a massive thing that you know of any serious studies that are done to see how much of this is just conjecture and how much of this might actually happen?
How much of Israeli?
Or external influences, whether they're Zoroastrian or Persian or anything else?
Of course, we have to distinguish between Israeliyat and those influences. Because Israeliyat, not all Israeliyat are things that we should reject. Israeliyat are those traditions which are reported by Jewish converts at the time of the Prophet or immediately after that. And many of these Israeliyat are stories of Bible, which some of them are approved by the Quran. The reason these Israeliyat became very popular at that time was that the Bible was not translated into Arabic. And as you see, Quran deals with the stories in a very concise way. And Muslims wanted the full account of these stories. So, to whom they should refer? To a Muslim Jew convert to Islam who can read the Bible and who can tell them what was the full story. And then how these were attributed to the Prophet is unknown, but not all of them is in fact attributed to the Prophet. They are just said as a companion of the Prophet, for example, said this is the story of, for example, Suleiman. And they directly translated from the Bible, and then they crept into Muslim literature. And there are very long discussions about what part of Israeliyat we can bring in. For example, one of the major Israeliyat which has crept into Muslim tradition is the life of the world, 7,000 years. You see many Muslim scholars say that life of the world, the duration of the whole existence of the world is 7,000 years. From the beginning of creation, when Allah started to create to the end, and now we know that that is completely baseless. We don't know how many billions of years is that. But that's one of the Israeliyat. And it was accepted by most prominent scholars during the centuries. They knew this is Israeliyat, but they said, yes, we accept it. So, very difficult to judge these traditions. And this is what Rashid Reza says, these are Israeliyat which have crept into our tradition.
Allahumma.